Blog Talk Radio.
Hippest of the hip cats, of course, that's Brian Setzer, Slim Jim Phantom, and Long John, dude, the Stray Cats. James Bostic here with you on a conservative's perspective, Patriot Nation radio here at Blog Talk Radio. Good to be back with you. You know what? The elite in this country, and yeah, that includes Republicans, the elite in this country sin against it. Calm down, Gary. Calm down. Gary gets excited when I start talking about sin. He's praying for a turnaround in it. But no, the elite in this country, they sin against this nation. And what I mean by that is they seek enrichment in whatever levels that may come in, obviously monetary or in power and influence. And they seek this enrichment not for the greater good, not for the benefit of all or even some of the citizenry, only unto themselves. They seek this enrichment. They seek this power, this cultivating and acquisition, constant, endless acquisition of power and wealth for themselves. And sooner or later, there are people out there who have a commitment to the truth. They have a commitment to honesty. They have a commitment to making their fellow citizens aware of some of the things that are going on. And we've seen that a lot. You know, we've seen that since, well, I'm not going to go back any further than Watergate and the Watergate hearings and then the CIA hearings that came shortly after that and Iran-Contra. Whitewater Realty, Rose Law Firm and Whitewater Realty with the Clintons and all the different scandals, all the different hearings that we've had. About the various scandals in this nation and the various players in these dramas that do such harm to the country. And now, you know, in the electronic age, the age of the great electronic medium, which, you know, goes back to Eisenhower, maybe a little bit before, but, you know, so the cameras come on, the lights flip on, the cameras start turning, the gavels bang, and the congressmen and the senators, you know, they thump their chests and they grandstand in the name of their constituency. And these people, these bad actors, these bastards, okay? Not the bastards that killed Kenny, but they're probably worse. These guys are probably worse than the bastards that killed Kenny. But these bastards, they sit before these hearings and, you know, it depends on who they are. If it's one of the Democrats guy, well, the Democrat guys are going to give this dude cover. They're going to excuse. They're going to rationalize. They're going to defend. They're going to deflect. If it isn't one of their guys, then they're going to attack. They're going to rip them to shreds. And it's tremendous theater. It's high drama in many ways, but at the same time, it's also kind of pessimistic or cynical in this high drama, because we know nothing is going to happen beyond what we see on the stage. And these actors, they read their lines back and forth. And then at the end of the day, for example, General Mark Milley, bastard, is going to get in his government vehicle when he leaves these government hearings, and he's going to go back home, or he's going to go to Cracker Barrel, you know, or Country Buffet, wherever that fat bastard goes. Okay? But that's it. That's the extent of it. Maybe somebody said something that ruffled his feathers a little bit and, you know, upsets his appetite, and he can't have the extra brownie sundae. Who knows? Whatever, you know, whatever he likes to get in. And I would watch these hearings. And I mean, I've been watching them for years. I've been watching them since Watergate. Okay. And, you know, I've been around that long. And nothing ever changes. During Watergate, some good, solid guys wound up going to jail. G. Gordon Liddy in particular. Not dead air, I'm just kind of collating my thoughts. And these people, that's all that happens. Hillary Clinton, what happened to Hillary Clinton? Well, at this point, what difference does it make? Right? Exactly. At this point, what difference does it make? Nothing happened to her ass. Nothing. Nothing happened to Bill Clinton. Nothing happened to any of their stooges. Nothing happened to Eric Holder. Fast and Furious, you guys remember that? Nothing happened to Lois Lerner. Nothing happened to Kathleen Sebelius. Nothing happened to James Comey. Nothing happened to John Brennan. By the way, speaking of John Brennan, did you know that in 1976, John Brennan voted for the Communist Party USA's candidate, Slobber and Gus Hall? How in the hell does a communist sympathizer become head of Central Intelligence? That's a rhetorical question. I know how. Because of the communist bastard that put him there, Barack Obama. Nothing happened to Brennan. Nothing happened to Comey. Nothing happened to Mueller. Nothing happened to Wiseman, Andrew Wiseman, all those guys. You remember those cats from the impeachment? That headhunting party, that necktie party, that lynch mob. Anything happened to those guys? No. Any more than anything's going to happen to General Milley, to Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, Javier Becerra, to Anthony Fauci. Nothing. And, you know, that should be the most outrageous thing of all. If Superman were a real guy, I swear to God, he would be given out with one of those tears like Iron Eyes Cody did when he was doing the American Litter campaign. You remember Chief Iron Eyes Cody in the canoe and all the crap in the water and all the stuff around Beaver Land, and it shows him in the end with a tear? That's what Superman would be like. There is no truth. There is no justice. And these people are trying to destroy the American way. They're damn close. They're damn close to it. So beyond a conviction, and I won't even say a conviction in the court of public opinion, but rather in a very smaller court of the informed. You know, these people, we see them for what they are. We see their treason. We see their avarice. We see their grift, their corruption. But so few others do. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the studies, but there's been study and study and study. Laboratory test acid proves, you know, conservative radio recommended by 4 or 5, you know, 4 out of 5 dentists who recommend conservative radio. The people who listen to conservative radio and that type of talk radio are, by and large, some of the more intelligent people that you're going to come across. How much conservative talk do you see on CNN? ABC, CBS, PBS, NBC, even Fox. How much do you really see? Not that much. news services, Fox included, the establishment types, the business types, you know, they bank on the public having a very short memory. And, you know, a lot of times the public doesn't disappoint. They do. And it makes it easier for some of the more corrupt types within media to control that narrative, for some of the more propagandistic types. We have a certain line that they want to push. It makes it easy. But sometimes, and I'm not saying this is one of those times, but sometimes, you know, we can take heart. The Democrats, the Marxist progressive left, they're mad in their lust for power. Like I said, it's an endless cultivation, acquisition of it. They you know, for themselves, for you know, the more fanatic ideologues, everything they do is for the party. The others, not so much. It's what they do for them. There was supposed to be the big infrastructure bill. It was supposed to come up for a vote this week. It didn't. It didn't because of a couple of senators. Joe Manchin from my home state of West Virginia. And Joe comes from a long line of crooked politicians. He knows the game. Kyrsten Sinema, don't know that much about, but they both have their reasons, their motivations for stopping this thing, and I don't really know what they are. I have said for a couple of years, and the news media has worked assiduously to try and paper over it, but there is a great deal of disarray in the Democrat Party, a great deal. And this is one of them. This is one of the splits. You have this extreme progressive Marxist wing with the AOCs and the Arianna Presleys and Ilhan Omar and the other chick. Jayapal. So you've got the squad in there, and the Bernie Sanders and those types. And they're out there, and they're wanting to push. They're wanting to push left all the way. They're in. If they're saying, and in some aspects, I agree. You know, if you're going to walk up to the bell, you may as well go ahead and ring it. But there's always overreach, and as one of the things that has been one of the saving graces about this country is the incessant overreach of the left, which invariably, for a time, you know, stimulates enough people on our side to wake up to implement some kind of a course correction, albeit briefly, until the left thinks they're in a position ripe for trying to take power again and they screw them loose. And that's what they do a lot of times. So now they're in disarray. They're in disarray on a lot of different levels. And this infrastructure fail, and it's fundamentally what's going on here, has not been good for them. And I'm gonna share with you this. Before we get into that, I want to share this with you. I don't know if I've played it here or not. I've meant to. I played it on the other shows. New Zealand, I think, or Australia. Sky News and a New Zealand anchor or Australian anchor had this to say about Joe Biden. This was back about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
And just before we go, let's end the evening with a word from the leader of the free world. I'll personally write a check to anybody who can decipher what Joe Biden is trying to convey here.
Yeah, that, you know, well, you know, what do you want to do with Biden? I want to box him. I should be so lucky. You know what I mean? But this, the kinds of things, or, you know, stuff that's coming out of Florida, stuff that's coming out of, you know, Robert E. Lee been in Afghanistan, you're the one. No, anyway.
Florida, Robert E. Lee. How is that man dressing himself, let alone leading the most powerful nation on earth?
Well, I'm not really sure that he is dressing himself, and I'm definitely sure he is not leading the most powerful nation on earth. I don't know who is, but I'm pretty damn sure it's not Joe. So while the White House right now is basically functioning as the most expensive nursing home in the world, Capitol Hill is in a state of war. Not between Democrats and Republicans, but this is Democrat on Democrat, a fiscal war. Now, normally, a majority party with this guy in the Oval Office would turn to the administration to broker a deal. But the word is that Biden is keeping, and I'm doing my air fingers quote, a careful distance from the battle. And that probably makes sense, seeing as how he just got rolled by the Taliban and the French. He's not up for the only thing that any government official will fight to the death for, and that's not honor or country, but money. Secret empires. Pete Schweitzer, President General Accounting Organization. It's all there. It's all there. It's all open source. None of it is anonymous. And that's, if there's anything that Joe Biden has been dedicated to for the 50 plus years he's been in politics, it's been himself and money. Excuse me a moment while I cough. Yeah, we're back. That's all Joe Biden knows. And, you know, he put his family to work once he got in there. And if he is not up to fighting about money, if he is not able to engage in this battle, what use is he? He's the weakest man in the White House in probably 100 years, and it's not just age, which makes him a long shot for a second term, and it's led to former opponents, many of them in the Senate, acting like they might run again in 2024. And it isn't the diminished mental capacity, and there is no question about that. And it's, you know, that cognitive decline, you know, basically these days, if you've watched, precludes him from having much to say on anything except his love of ice cream and little girls. I can't imagine anybody more ineffective winding up in the White House. Two generations in politics, and people have yet to take Joe Biden seriously. Even sitting in the Oval Office, even as President of the United States, he's a Rodney Dangerfield punchline. He can't get no respect. I'm telling you, no respect. I took my kid to Disney World. I gave him $50. And he could do whatever he wanted. He got in the cab and went home. No respect, I'm telling you. So, there. He's in the White House. There were a lot of things that weighed him down even before his brain turned to jelly in terms of negatives. Come out of one of America's smallest states, had a big chance at becoming president about 30 years ago, and he got busted in a plagiarism scandal. His corruption is legendary. And politicians who are corrupt and transparently for sale, like the Clintons, are usually seen as weak and easy to manipulate. When Barack Obama picked Joe Biden, it wasn't because he respected him. It was just the opposite. Biden was the opponent whom he respected the least. Obama wanted the anti-Cheney. He wanted an idiot who would pose no threat, look good in pictures, and whom no one could conceivably pick to replace him. Biden, having learned his lessons, used that same criteria to pick Kamala Harris. Okay? Obama detested this guy so much he refused to back him for the top job in the Democrat primaries in 2016 and again in 2020, and has ridiculed him multiple times in leaked media quotes. So he's still in the White House. I mean, he's there. In spite of all these things. You know, I mean, obviously, we can take a look at the election irregularities, and there are people who are going to talk about that's not what this show's going to be about. So he campaigns in the basement. He creeps on little girls. He can't string three words together to make a sentence. He has to have help crossing the damn street, but he's in the White House. So what was the selling point? What was the motivator? What was the drive for this candidacy? Well, we're seeing it right now. These people are untethered. And when I'm talking about the people, the Democrat factions, the different factions and the money behind them, the competing mega donors are now fighting all this out. So the mice are playing because the cat's not only away, he's not really all there. But it isn't just Joe Biden. Nancy Pelosi is another good example. The reason she has her job is because she's a pipeline to San Francisco money, while Chuck Schumer, her opposite number, is a pipeline to Wall Street money. Now, they're not legislative leaders. They're a couple of political hacks who were really, really good at getting money for their allies, okay? They were good at getting money. They were pipelines. But the trouble is to get to play that game. And right now, all these mega donors, these left-wing mega donors and business special interests are winding up fighting over trillions in spending using the chess pieces that they funded over the years. And with these narrow majorities, it doesn't take a lot for these different factions, the radicals and the moderates, to basically wind up taking the entire process hostage. On paper, the Democrats control the legislative and executive branches. In reality, they're a house divided with no real leadership and no one able to have the final say. The real power, excuse me while I cough again. And we're back. The real power, as I said, always belonged to the staffers, because of the guys that do everything. They get all the information together. But staffers work behind the scenes. They're useless in a public power struggle. But the problem for the Democrats is they have no leadership. Not Pelosi, not Schumer, not Biden. They're not leading. They're not leading at all. And so in this vacuum that is devoid of leadership, there's nothing but power struggles. People like Schumer and Pelosi live in fear of lefties who control the culture, but their fear of being primaried, their fear of being drowned in cash from George Soros or Reed Hastings is a non-issue to more moderate elected officials who operate out of the red of the purple states. And they don't have anything but contempt for Pelosi and Schumer's terror in the face of the squad. Excuse me. They can't reliably run anything. They overreach. And I think a lot of times this overreach is motivated by a sense of self. And not only what can they do for the party, for the ideology that they represent, but at the same time, what can be brought their way as well. And I think that it is that greed, that personal ambition, that leads to, that motivates a lot of this overreach, because they're thinking, the more I get from my ideology, the more I get from me. You know, it's like a percentage. So they're motivated to try and grab all the power they can, because it will also trickle down into their own individual personal power. And when that happens, when we see Fusion GPS and we see the State Department and all that convoluted mess that went into Brian Steele and this ponied up Russian dossier, which was nothing, a massive nothing burger. And they have the hearings. They try to root these people out. And, you know, there's a lot of smart back and forth. There's a lot of comeback at these hearings. But nothing happens. Nobody goes to jail. This is the worst as it gets for them. I want to share with you. Let me see if I can find it here. Milley was on. Mark Milley, Thoroughly Woke Milley, was Capitol Hill last week. And this is, who is this with? Ah, this is Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz and General Milley get into it here. And it's great. And you're going to listen to it and you're going to go, man, that's fantastic. That's excellent. He's really giving it. And, but then at the end of it, you know, I hate to tell you this, but it's, that's it. That's as bad as it gets. Like I said, you know, he left. He got in his government vehicle and took off. Okay. Million guests. Where are you, pal? Show me where you're at. Ah, there we are. Okay. This was from last week, probably about Tuesday or Wednesday, from the Senate hearings having to do with the Afghanistan surrender.
February 26, 2020, House Armed Services Committee, General Mark Milley. We know we're not going to defeat the Taliban militarily, and they're not going to defeat the government of Afghanistan militarily. You really blew that call, didn't you, General?
I believe that that was a issue of strategic stalemate, and that if we had remained in Afghanistan, with the advisory levels of effort, then the government of Afghanistan.
Well, that's an interesting
Afghan
answer to a question. It's just not one I asked. You spent more time with Bob Woodward on this book than you spent analyzing the very likely prospect that the Afghanistan government was going to fall immediately to the Taliban, didn't you?
Not even close, Congressman.
Oh, really? Because you said right after Kabul fell that no one could have anticipated the immediate fall of the Ghani government. When did you become aware that Joe Biden tried to get Ghani to lie about the conditions in Afghanistan? He did that in July. Did you know that right away?
I'm not aware of what President Biden...
You're not aware of the phone call that Biden had with Ghani where he said, whether it is true or not, we want you to go out there and paint a rosy picture of what's going on in Afghanistan. You're the chief military advisor to the president. You said that the Taliban was not going to defeat the government of Afghanistan militarily, which, by the way, they cut through them like a hot knife through butter. And then the president tries to get Ghani to lie. When did you become aware of that attempt?
Well, there's two things there, Congressman, if I may. One is what I said was the situation was stalemate, and if we kept advisors with there, the government of Afghanistan and the army would have still been there. That's what I said. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But
seems wrong now. With
well,
Taliban
we withdrew all the
questions.
We withdrew all the
advice. Austin. Secretary Austin, are you capable of assessing whether another has the will to fight?
No, we're not, and that's the point that the chairman made earlier. So.
That's just like an incredibly disappointing thing for the Secretary of Defense to simply say, I can't assess whether someone has the will to fight, but it is consistent with your record. I mean, during the Obama administration, I think they gave you about $48 million to go train up some folks in Syria to go take on the Assad government, and I think your testimony was that only four or five survived first contact with the enemy. So what confidence should this committee have in you or should the country have in you when you've now confessed to us, and whether it's the swing and a miss in Afghanistan that General Milley talked to the Senate about yesterday, total failure, or whether it was your failures in Syria, you don't seem capable to look at a fighting force and determine whether or not they have the will.
Well,
is
recall,
that an embarrassing?
You recall, Congressman, that the end result was the SDF that we stood up that was very, very instrumental in turning the tide of battle up in Syria.
Oh, yeah. Turned it so much. You've got Assad in power in Syria. You've got the Taliban in power in Afghanistan. I mean, where have you been?
The focus was ISIS, Congressman, and those forces had significant effect on the ISIS network.
It just seems like you're chronically bad at this. And you have admitted that, I guess, which is to your credit. But, you know, when people in the military, like Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller, stand up and demand accountability, when they say that you all screwed up, when they point out that General Milley's statement that that the government of Afghanistan is not going to get defeated by the Taliban, well, he ends up in the brig. And you all end up in front of us, and your former employer, Raytheon, ends up with a lot of money, and we have poured cash and blood and credibility into a Ghani government that was a mirage. It fell immediately. And while the guy sitting next to you was off, you know, talking to Phil Rucker and was off doing his thing with Bob Woodward, we were buying into the big lie. The big lie that this was ever going to be successful and that we could ever rely on the Afghanistan government for anything at all. You know, General Milley, you kind of gave up the game earlier when you said you wanted to address elements of your personal conduct that were in question. We're not questioning your personal conduct. We're questioning in your official capacity going and undermining the chain of command, which is obviously what you did. You've created this whole chain
of command. Did not undermine the chain
narrative.
Of command in
yeah,
the manner
you did.
They performed.
You absolutely did. And it,
did not.
Well, you know what? You said yesterday that you weren't going to resign when senators asked you this question. And I believe that you guys probably won't resign. You seem to be very happy failing up over there. But if we didn't have a president that was so addled, you all would be fired because that is what you deserve. You have let down the people who wear the uniform in my district and all around this country, and you're far more interested in what your perception is and how people think about you in insider Washington books than you care about winning,
Gentleman's
which this
time
group
has
is incapable
expired.
Of doing.
Okay, exactly. There it is in a nutshell. And he's not going to resign and nothing's going to happen to him. He serves at the pleasure of the president. And Joe Biden says, Milley's my guy. Same thing with the Secretary of Defense. Same thing with Secretary of State. So, was he put in his place? Did he do, you know, was he in combat? Two names. I'm just gonna toss them out. United States Army General Walter E. Short. United States Navy Admiral Husband Kimmel. Okay. An Army guy, Navy guy. Well, those two men were in charge for their respective branches of service on December 7th, 1941. They were in charge in the weeks and the months leading up to Pearl Harbor. Now, let me differentiate the difference between men, and I said men, like General Short and Admiral Kimmel, and these bastards, General Milley, Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. General Short and Admiral Kimmel were dedicated to the defense of this country. They had been in the Pacific for a while. And people who were in the Pacific saw what the Japanese were doing, and they knew that at some point war was going to come. Just as the folks who were informed as to what was going on in Europe and watching the Nazi Party and the Germans and their territorial expansions knew war was coming. Excuse me. Now, the things that happened at Pearl Harbor that created a lot of the damage and provided a number of really easy targets for the Japanese that morning had to do with security. These guys were motivated concerning security on aircraft dispersal. And if they'd been placed out in a wide area, they might not have lost as many aircraft. But the threat that they were looking at was saboteurs already on the island. So they brought the airplanes closer into the center of the field where they could be more easily guarded and sabotage could be prevented. However, it didn't really do a whole lot towards aerial attacks. These men were relieved of command. They were not corrupt men. I do not believe them to be dishonest men or even feckless or incompetent men. But they made a series of wrong decisions that led to some pretty disastrous consequences. And not only Walter Short and husband Kimmel, there were a lot of people in that entire loop who have plenty of blame to bear. But General Short and Admiral Kimmel were the faces of the United States Army and Navy, respectively, in the Pacific. Well, we've blown straight past the bottom of the hour, and we usually have done a musical break by now, so we're going to go ahead and take one. We will be back with more of a conservative perspective right here on Patriot Nation Radio, blogtalkradio.com. Back after this.
What do you want to do tonight?
Same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Of course!
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down. Oh, drinking beer in a cabaret, was I having fun? Until one night she caught me right, now I'm on the run.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down.
Oh, I see you every
I'll be your regular mama, and I'll put that gun away.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay the thing down before it goes off and hurts somebody. Oh, she kicked up my windshield and she hit me over the head. She cussed and cried and said I'd lied and she wished that I was dead.
Oh, lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol packing mama, lay that pistol down. With three tough gals from deep down Texas way, we got no pals. They don't like the way we play. We're a rough, rootin', tootin', shootin' trio, but you're seen a sister Cleo. She's a terror, make no error, but there ain't no life to fair, is what we tell her.
Lay that pistol down, babe, lay that pistol down. Pistol backin' mama, lay that pistol down.
The way China will respond is when we gather the rest of the world that in fact invades in open trade and making sure that we're in a position that the world that we deal with WHO the right way. That in fact that's when things begin to change. That's when China's behavior is going to change.
I want to thank you both, and I want to thank the former general, I keep calling him general, but the guy who runs that outfit over there. I want to make sure we thank the secretary for all he's done to try to implement what we just talked about and for recommending these two women for promotion. Thank you all. May God bless you all and may God protect our troops. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back. James Bostic here, Conservative's Perspective on Blog Talk Radio here at Blog Talk. No, wait a minute. On Patriot Nation Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. We also do a recorded version of the show that's on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, quite frankly, I'm astonished, but if you aren't listening, you should be, because it is the very best of libertarian and conservative talk radio that you're going to find anywhere out there, mojo50.com. Also be on the sharp lookout for our pal Gary Benford and United Patriots Uprising out there on all the platforms everywhere. He's a superstar. He's taken over the world, and I cannot possibly be prouder or happier for my friend. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah, theater. And the fact that none of these guys, you know, and it just – And I'm thinking, because Joe Biden is putting up some pretty bad theater right now in terms of his behavior, in terms of his cognitive decline, you know, and I've got to wonder just how many, and I know there are, there have got to be some of those folks out there who have a really, really serious case of buyer's remorse when it comes to this idiot. I think that there are people who absolutely believe that they were sold a bill of goods in light of what they're seeing now. And I wholeheartedly agree with them. They absolutely were sold a bill of goods. And I'm sure if they could get that vote back, you know, they probably wouldn't do with it what they did. There's a comedian out there by the name of J.P. Sears, and you can find him at awakenwithjp.com. He's taken this, and he's really good. He's a real strong First Amendment guy, and he's incredibly funny. You've probably seen him on Facebook or other social media, long red hair. He's a funny, funny guy. And he skewers left and right, but it seems invariably the left because they're the ones that are, you know, brokering the politics of fear and control and intimidation and all that, you know, all the negative tactics that they have to employ because in the arena of ideas, they suck. So, you know, there's nothing for them to do after you shoot down their idea, but to intimidate, to attack, to name call. That's what they do. Anyway, this is something that I found this the other day, pretty new from JP. Biden voters pretending nothing's wrong. And I guarantee you there are some Biden voters out there who are going to say just exactly, then you probably know people like this. Give them a listen. J.P. Sears, Biden voters pretending there's nothing wrong.
So you voted for Joe Biden?
Absolutely.
Do you have any regrets at this point?
What would there be to regret?
How do you think his presidency is going so far?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, he, like, what a leader. The way he... Great.
What are you most happy with regarding his job performance?
Well, if you just look at, like, where do I start? Building back better, am I right?
What do you think he's built back better?
Well, he's built the Taliban back better, and also, like, his whole promise about uniting the country, because we've been divided for so long because of Orange Man. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. So I think there's no question he's been successful at uniting us.
He's mandating laws that literally segregate society.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's doing that, isn't it? With climate change, it really makes it tough, and it's just really part of the process. And when you get down to it, you can't really unite everyone unless you first separate out the people that you're not united with. You get to see the big picture of where he's going with all this. It's kind of like if there's cancer in the body. The problem is the cancer cells behave as though they're separate from the rest of the body. But if you just give it time in our patient, the cancer will eventually take over the entire body and there will be nothing left but the cancer and thus you'll have unity.
Do you still believe Biden is the one in charge? He's supposed to be the president, yet he's instructed on what reporters to call on. Someone scripts all his speeches and the White House routinely cuts off the audio feed at news conferences if he starts speaking off the cuff.
Of course he's the one in charge. He's the leader of the free world. He's a very powerful man. President's got a job to do. You've had a job before, so you know what it's like. You know how there's other people at your work. You've got to work together and communicate. And like one of those people, it's like it's their job to tell you what to do.
Like a boss?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like that for the president.
Are you happy with how Biden's affected gas prices, food, the cost of lumber has never been higher, and the rate of inflation's at an all-time high?
Well, I mean, like, sure, there's been a few setbacks, but, like, if you're doing the things that cause inflation and then inflation goes up, like, who can predict that? But could you imagine what would be happening in these areas if Trump was still in office?
When he was in office, all these areas were objectively better.
Well, I mean, I guess they were. Weren't they?
As a Biden voter, how do you feel about what he's done to Afghanistan?
Afghanistan? That's over with. I mean, I don't think there's any point in bringing that up. That's all in the past.
No, it's still going on. There's still Americans and American allies that Biden left behind.
Well, I mean, the president, he's got a tough job to do. And when he was looking to pull out of Afghanistan and military intelligence would tell him the Taliban will take over the country if you do, I think one would just assume that they wouldn't, but then they did. And it's not that big of a deal. And just like the president's pointed out, the Taliban aren't such bad guys. And I think Biden asking them for permission makes Biden look like a nice guy. And sure, the Taliban are saying no when it comes to releasing Americans, but it's really just cultural differences, right? What would Trump have done? Used intimidation and military force? There is no place for that in the military. Besides, with terrorists, you basically have to let them have control so you can have peace. And that's what Biden's done.
What do you think about Biden leaving Americans behind?
Well, Americans are inherently racist.
Do you think all Americans are racist?
Yes, all white Americans.
Does that mean that Biden's racist?
No. Well, no. No, because he's always the one telling other people they're racist. So I guess that means he's the only white American who's not racist. And he's a shining example. Because under his leadership, like, the NFL now has two national anthems, one for white people and one for black people. And I think if we keep going at this rate, eventually he'll take us to a place where white people and black people don't have to interact with each other at all. That's how anti-racist he is. He wants white people and black people to happily coexist completely separate from each other.
What do you think about what Biden's done on the border?
Well, that's a complex situation. Just opening the border so everyone can come in, sure, that puts women, children, and babies in inhumane conditions and creates unprecedented levels of sex trafficking, but there's really no way to prevent that whole thing.
Well, he could keep the border closed.
I don't think that would work.
It worked when Trump did it, and then Biden simply undid it.
Well, I mean, the way Trump tweeted was so mean, and the guy was such a xenophobe, and just, I mean, not letting everyone into your country who wants to come in, it's very uninclusive. It's like, say you have a boat that can hold 10 people, but there's 100 people that want to get onto your boat. What do you do? Of course you let all 100 people on, and yes, that will sink your boat and everyone drowns, but it's the right thing to do.
Do you think that Biden's in cognitive decline?
CNN has never brought up that possibility even once, so I'm pretty sure that's not what they're telling me to think.
It's been discovered that General Milley called the Chinese military and agreed to warn them if the U.S. were to attack. Many would say that's treason, yet Biden still said he has great confidence in General Milley.
It's no big deal. I mean, that'd just be like, if you're married and you went behind your wife's back with another woman, sounds like fun to me.
But in this analogy, I think that we're the ones getting cheated on.
Huh. That's much less fun. But at the end of the day, General Milley was just being a nice guy. All he did was aid the enemy a little bit. That's not treason.
That's actually the definition of treason.
Well, I don't really like to define words. It's a little too binary for where we're at in society.
Some people say Biden spends most of his time fear-mongering about the virus, trying to get people to live in a state of fear. How is that helpful to our country?
Come on, inspiring people to live in fear, that's the sign of a good leader. Because the more afraid you are, the more protected you are. Leaders who inspire people to get in touch with greatness, not only are they not leaders, they're dangerous psychopaths misleading people.
Do you feel good about the White House infringing on free speech as they instruct Facebook on what to censor?
I say it's about time we have a president step up and protect us from the Constitution. Besides, if you agree with everything Biden says you can say, which you should, because that's what he wants you to do, then you're good. Besides, I don't see how any harm could happen from a little good old-fashioned elimination of free speech.
Via objective metrics, the country has gone downhill since Biden took office. If he's still alive in 2024, will you vote for him?
You mean when he's still alive? I think he looks very young for 135. So whether he's dead or alive, of course Biden's got my vote again. Because based on the way I let groupthink dictate my actions, he's earned my vote again. And besides, if Biden got us into this mess, then I think there's only one guy who can get us out of this mess. And that's the same guy taking us deeper into the same mess.
Now, be honest, you know Biden voters just like this. We absolutely do. And I don't know, there has to be some level of anger, of rage. I mean, there just has to be, because a lot of people that voted for Biden aren't really that different from you and I. I mean, they're not, okay? They're not. They may have been misled. They may not be quite as informed. But that's it. I mean, you know, you got 10% of radicals on the left, 10% of radicals on the right, and the rest of us run that 80% down the middle. And yes, some of them voted for Biden. Maybe they won't vote Democrat this next time. Maybe they're really angry at what's going on. Never did they imagine that it would be what it turned out to be. I guess we'll find out in 2022. Yesterday, the Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland, basically sent a letter to the FBI at the behest of the National School Boards Association to begin investigating parents who show up at board meetings protesting mask mandates, protesting critical race theory, protesting all these weird left-wing things that these guys want to screw with our kids' minds concerning. And when parents stand up and they don't want to have their children subjected to this, then they can be tagged as a domestic terrorist and pegged by the FBI for investigation. Lisa Monaco, a Department of Justice official who was sent to a hearing yesterday, caught it from Josh Hawley concerning this. And if you haven't heard about it and you're a mom or a dad and you got kids in the school system, you know, you're probably upset already. One good thing, before we play this, I think, and I'm in the school business too. That's my daytime job, man. I work at the high school that I graduated from. So I've kind of got like that whole welcome back, Cotter thing going for me. And I work in the special ed department. I work with a very small population of kids within that school, probably no more than a dozen. I'm involved with a lot of kids, but I work very closely with these guys. They're what they call the description, the label that's popular right now is moderately impaired. And this is your late bloomers, your Down syndrome guys, terrific kids, terrific, beautiful, fantastic kids, and autistic kids too. I get to do some work with autistic kids. And there are challenges, and I would not trade them for anything in the world. I love what I do in the school business. Long time ago, there was a baseball player by the name of Dizzy Dean. He was a pitcher. And he played for the St. Louis Cardinals. And he coined the phrase, if you can do it, it ain't bragging. And I can't remember when it was that I heard it, but it stuck with me ever since then. And I'm pretty good at what I do with those kids. And I'm grateful that I have the gifts and the skills to be able to do it, because I'm right where I need to be, doing exactly what I need to be doing when I'm not here hanging out with you cats and doing what I'm supposed to be doing here. And one of the reasons that we have great kids at the school that I work at, one of the reasons that we have great kids is because we have great moms and dads. We have moms and dads that are committed to their children getting a good education. They're committed to seeing their children being accepted and socialized, and they are. And I wish, I'm not going to, but I will say this. The high school that I go, that I work at, is one of the best in terms of the children accepting these guys. And I'm very, very proud of that. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. You know, parents have been showing up. So the good thing about the pandemic, I think one good thing about the pandemic, although there were no good things about it in terms of children, they should have stayed in school. Sick ones should have stayed home. Healthy ones should have just kept on trucking. I've always said that. I won't back off of it. And I think it would have worked out better for everybody. Look at Florida. Look at Texas. But if nothing else, I think that it allowed for a larger number of parents to take a look at what their kids were really being taught. And when they saw it, they were shocked. They were appalled. This is not what they were expecting. This is not what they were taught when they were in school. And so they started going to board meetings, and they started looking at these onerous and these draconian mandates about masks. Every damn body on the planet knows these masks don't do anything. But they'll cling to them. Just a little heads up, people I have found in these places where, you know, they want you to wear a mask. If you just walk around with that mask in your hand as if you are preparing to put it on, but you're distracted momentarily, they'll leave you alone. I do it all the time. Or walk around like I do at school with a pocket full of M&Ms. You don't have to wear a mask if you're eating. So when I go up and down the hallway, I hit my favorite special ed teacher's room and I'll get a handful of peanuts and shove them in my pocket, or M&Ms rather. And then I can go down the hallway from classroom to classroom. Nobody's going to say anything because I'm eating. Always thinking. But back to what we were talking about. So parents who are seeing what's going on in some of these really weirded out school systems, I don't work in one of those, thank God. Being insulated here in the mountains, there's not a whole lot of left-wing rhubarbery, although there is some. It's manageable at this time. Because I believe that most of the people that work in our County Board of Education, particularly the special ed department, I think by and large are committed to doing a good job for these kids and making them responsible and solid citizens. But these parents, but that's not always the case. And parents, where this is not always the case, are coming together and they're speaking out. And these elite bastards on these school boards think that they know better than everyone. And that was the reason they were voted into the school board, was because of their vast intellectual content. And they treat these mom and dads like crap. And that's what they're trying to do here. They're trying to stifle them. They're trying to chill that speech. And I'm not going to go any further into it than that. Lisa Monaco is the Department of Justice official that apparently Attorney General Garland sent to take the hits on this because he was busy investigating the Boy Scouts for something. Who knows? Anyway, Senator Josh Hawley, Lisa Monaco from, I think it was earlier today.
Come back to this extraordinary letter and memorandum that the Attorney General of the United States issued yesterday. Practically every day brings new reports about this administration weaponizing the federal bureaucracy to go after political opponents. Frankly, I don't think we've ever seen anything like it in American history. I mean, for those of us who missed the McCarthy era, I guess this president is intent on bringing it to us, but with new force and new power and new urgency, unlike anything we've ever seen. Are you aware of any time in American history when an attorney general has directed the FBI to begin to intervene in school board meetings, local school board meetings?
I'm not aware, and I'm not aware that is not going on. Let me be very, very
really, this
clear.
Isn't about local school board meetings? That's not the subject of the memorandum? I thought that was in the memorandum.
The memorandum is quite clear. It's one page, and it asks the U.S. attorney community and the FBI special agents in charge to convene state and local law enforcement partners to ensure that there's an open line of communication to address threats, to address violence, and that's the appropriate role of the Department of Justice to make sure that we are addressing criminal conduct and violence.
At local school board meetings, let me just ask you this. Is parents waiting sometimes for hours to speak at a local school board meeting to express concerns about critical race theory or the masking of their students, particularly young children? Is that in and of itself, is that harassment and intimidation? Is waiting to express one's view at a school board meeting harassment and intimidation?
As the Attorney General's memorandum made quite clear, spirited debate is welcome, is a hallmark of this country. It's something we all should engage in.
No, I don't think so, Ms. Monica. With all due respect, it didn't make it quite clear. It doesn't define those terms, nor does it define harassment or intimidation. It talks about violence. I think we can agree that violence shouldn't be condoned or looked aside from in any way, swept under the rug at all. But harassment and intimidation, what do those terms mean in the context of a local school board meeting? I mean, this seems to, in the First Amendment context, we talk about the chill to speech. If this isn't a deliberate attempt to chill parents from showing up at school board meetings for their elected school board, I don't know what is. I mean, I'm not aware of anything like this in American history. We're talking about the FBI. You're using the FBI to intervene in school board meetings. That's extraordinary.
Senator, I have to respectfully disagree. That is not what...
Point me to an instance.
The Attorney General's memorandum made quite clear that violence is not appropriate. Spirited public debate on a whole range of issues is absolutely what this country is all about.
Then why is it being investigated by the FBI?
It is not. When and if any... situation turns to violence, then that is the appropriate role of law enforcement to address it.
The memorandum covers more than violence. It talks about intimidation. It talks about harassment. So I'm asking you to draw some lines. We do this all the time in the First Amendment context. This is the sum and substance of First Amendment law. So I expect that you'll be available and willing to do it now. Tell me where the line is with parents expressing their concerns, waiting for hours in these school board meetings. We've all seen the videos. This happened in my state. Parents have waited for hours. Sometimes the school board meetings have been ended before they can speak because the school board doesn't want to hear it. And now parents are told that if they wait and they express their views, that they may be investigated for intimidation?
I don't know who's telling them that, Senator. The job of the Justice Department is to investigate crimes. When a situation turns to violence, when and if a situation turns to violence, it's the job of the Justice Department and local law enforcement to address that. The Attorney General's memorandum simply asked the U.S. Attorney community, the FBI, and their counterparts to ensure that state and local law enforcement has an open line of communication to report threats, whether they happen in the context of election officials being threatened, whether they haven't happened in the context of members of Congress being threatened, which the FBI responds to on a regular basis, as is appropriate. The job of the Justice Department is to address criminal conduct.
You know, all I can say is this is truly extraordinary. I think you know it is. It's unprecedented. You can't point to a single instance where anything like this has happened before. And I think parents across this country are going to be stunned to learn, stunned, that if they show up at a local school board meeting, by the way, where they have the right to appear and be heard, where they have the right to say something about their children's education, where they have the right to vote, and you are attempting to intimidate them, you are attempting to silence them, you are attempting to interfere with their rights as parents, and yes, with their rights as voters. This is wrong, this is dangerous, and I cannot believe that an Attorney General of the United States is engaging in this kind of conduct. And frankly, I can't believe that you are sitting here today defending it. I intend to get answers to these questions. You won't answer my questions. I'm going to get answers to these questions. Mr. Chairman, we need to have a hearing on this subject. We need to hear from the Attorney General himself. He needs to come here, take the oath, sit there, and answer questions. We have never seen anything like this before in our country's history. And frankly, I want to say I think it is a dangerous, dangerous precedent.
In the letter that the Attorney General sends to the Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Director of the Executive Office for U.S. Attorneys, he says, in recent months, there has been a disturbing spike in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff who participate in the vital work of running our nation's public schools. While spirited debate about policy matters is protected under our Constitution, that protection does not extend to threats of violence or efforts to intimidate individuals based on their views. Unless it's the government. Unless it's the government using the FBI, weaponizing the FBI to shut you up. Then it's okay. Why? Because we're the government. We got more guns than you, basically. I'm trying to think. And I'm just going to – we don't have a whole lot of time. I'm only doing 90 minutes tonight, so we only got about 10 minutes left. I'm going to type in school board officials, IALS, school teacher, being harassed. Well, I see a bunch of crap about the DOJ investigating threats to teachers and school board members. Do I see anything about school boards and board members being beat up or anything? No. No. I'm seeing some stuff where school board officials are being sued over sexual harassment that they committed. But I don't see anything. School official resigns over sexual harassment. Nothing. 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 But the Attorney General of the United States is going to weaponize the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So what happens? Some board member gets put in his place. Some intelligent parent slams the door on some board member. What are they going to do? They're going to report it to the, what if they decide, you know, this guy wants to be pissy about it and report it to the FBI? Because he was made to look bad. Because he was probably made to look like the jerk that he is. So he's going to pay this guy back. Or this woman. And then the FBI investigates her as a domestic terrorist. And what if she gets put on some kind of watch list? What if she gets flagged for observation on social media? She'll never get off of that. They'll never be removed from that. Moms, dads, listen to me. You got kids in the school system? Go check out your school system. I would say probably 75 to 88% of school board systems, you know, school systems in this country are probably pretty decent. But you won't know unless you take an interest in what's going on and what your kids are being taught. You won't know unless you go to a board meeting and see what's going on. Or maybe a couple of board meetings. I guess we're going to close out with this. It's the elephant in the room, and nobody ever wants to talk about it. You know, all these psychologists and these psychiatrists never been within 75 miles of Donald Trump. We're going to diagnose him as crazy. He's going to get us into a war. He's a megalomaniac. He's a narcissistic son of a whatever. He's, you know, he's the egomaniacal Cheeto head or whatever they would say. And it was, and these news anchors like Wolf Blitzer or Maddow. What's that guy's name? Maddow. Anyway, you know, or whoever it is, they sit there and they stroke their chin with their thumb and forefinger and they nod thoughtfully like these guys know what the hell they're talking about. So if they can do it, maybe we can too. And we don't have to be psychiatrists, psychologists. All we have to be is someone who's been around older people that have been in that process, you know, at some point of cognitive decline. And it is a tragic thing. Okay? And I know from which I speak. In one of my past lives, I did some activities directing at a couple of different nursing homes, and I loved it. So I saw day to day what could happen. And, you know, it is. It's tragic. It's heartrending for the individual, for the family, for the loved ones of an elderly person who suffers from Alzheimer's or some type of dementia. It's a disaster for our nation if it's our president. And that's the question. It's what we got to ask. And I've asked it a couple of times, but, I mean, let's just go ahead and get it on. Is he suffering from a disease that is robbing him of his cognitive abilities? Is it Alzheimer's? Is it organic brain syndrome? Is it organic effect syndrome? What is it Alzheimer's? What's going on? Well, President Biden's longtime personal physician and now White House physician, Dr. Kevin O'Connor, has either not performed or has not released the results of a cognitive test. Biden's staff shield him from view. The media continue to protect him. And since the media refuses to explore the cognitive abilities of the president, we're going to do it. And we're going to use the CDC's 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's. And we're going to look at President Biden's behavior. Number one, memory loss to the point that it disrupts daily life, such as a dependency on notes. An Australian news organization reporting on President Biden's news conference regarding damage from Hurricane Ida basically ended up highlighting his utter dependency on prepared notes. Australian media, New Zealand media, and British media, unlike American media, will inform their readers of Joe Biden's concerning behavior. The next thing, challenges in planning or solving problems. Hello, Afghanistan. Is that you? Difficulty in completing familiar tasks. Shore News noted in a March 21, 2021 article, President Biden lost his way walking toward Marine One and needed to be steered back to his helicopter by Vice President Harris. And he lost his way walking to Marine One. Guys, there's nothing in the way from the Rose Garden to Marine One. There's nothing in the way from Joe leaving the White House and walking to that helicopter. Nothing. The old bastard just veered off course and didn't know what he was doing. Confusion with time or places. The Independent Sentinel on February 29th, 2020, noted that candidate Biden stated right here in the state of North South Carolina at an event in South Carolina, later confusing the past and future by saying that he looked forward to appointing the first African-American senator. What? What? Trouble understanding visual images or spatial relations. We don't see any evidence of any change like that. He's not seeing things. He's not seeing things. He's, you know, space and distance. He seems to be pretty cognizant of. New problems with words in speaking or in writing. March 25th, the British Sun's headline reads, Biden completely forgets what he's talking about and mumbles incoherently at camera in excruciating press conference. The article noted that Biden ended the press conference by saying he was taking his final question and then walked away in the middle of the question. Our allies see this. The media here protects the president and keeps these things from the American people, but our allies see it. Misplacing things, losing the ability to retrace steps. In Duluth, Georgia, President Biden ended his speech by announcing to the crowd, I'm looking for my mask. I'm in trouble. Only to find his mask in his pocket. Who does the president think he's going to be in trouble with over his mask? Hey, he says that a lot. I got to do this or I'll get in trouble. Or I have to stop or I'm going to get in trouble. Or I got to call on these people or I'm going to get in trouble. Decreased or poor judgment. Good old Joe Biden was elected to the presidency because he got along with almost everyone. And just months into his presidency, he's needlessly humiliated French President Emmanuel Macron and all of France by announcing that America and England would be providing Australia with nuclear submarines, undercutting a deal that the Australians had already made with the French and left them out in the cold. They were offended to the point that they recalled their ambassador. They sent him back, but they did recall him for a while until Joe could figure out some way to withdrawal from work or social activities. The president spends almost every weekend alone with the first lady. Changes in mood and personality. United Kingdom's independent news headline says Biden faces backlash after snapping at CNN reporter. The CDC states people with one or more of these 10 warning signs should see a doctor and find the cause. President Biden exhibits at least 9 of the 10 CDC warning signs. That is concerning. In reading articles of Biden's behavior and watching videos of the president, it is apparent he is not in control of his own faculties, let alone in control of the federal government. If he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, why hasn't Congress acted in removing the president in accordance with Amendment 25? We had a bunch of people fired up to do that under Donald Trump. Well, it could be that the Democrat leaders in the House and Senate know that they need a weakened president to try and enact their legacy legislation and believe that they can continue to control the federal government with Biden in that role as weakened president. America with a weakened leader is kind of like some instructions that they give skydivers. If you have a malfunction, you got to decide how bad it is. If it results in a broken leg, ride it out to the ground. Because if you go to the reserve and it malfunctions, your life is over. We can't survive a President Harris, a House Speaker Pelosi, and Senate Leader Schumer leading the country. We just can't. 2022 has to be a statement, a real, strong, cogent, clear statement. Refuting. Oh, it's okay. 60 seconds left. That's all the time we got this evening. Thank you so much for listening. ACP is heard here twice a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We also have a recorded version of the program going out on the Mojo 5.0 Radio Network. Mojo, God bless it. On the Mojo 5.0 Radio Network. Mojo 5.0, if you're not listening, you ought to be, but not to me because apparently I can't talk. But they got a lot of great the hosts there. As a matter of fact, the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio you're going to find out there. That's all the time we've got. God bless you. God bless America. Thank you very much for the opportunity to hang out with you this evening. We'll be back here on Thursday taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. We'll see you then.